created, how he created and maintains the material world. The creation is being described by Maitreya Muni. And we saw in the beginning of the fifth chapter how in the beginning of existence there is only one entity, and that entity is Krishna. This is the meaning of God. God means that there is no one equal. He is asama udha. There is no one equal to him, no one greater than him. That he is the sarva-karana-karanam. That he is the cause of all causes. That everything rests upon him. Everything is dependent upon him. That is the meaning of absolute truth. That everything is dependent on the absolute truth, and yet the absolute truth is independent. He has no source, he has no cause, and everything rests upon his existence. And his existence doesn't rest upon any other existence. This is what it means, the absolute truth. So that is Krishna. So in the beginning there was Krishna, and then by Krishna's unlimitedly merciful desire, the creation begins. And it begins by his glance upon the material energy. And then from that, false ego is generated, or there is some differentiation within that material energy. And then false ego is generated. And as false ego combines with each of the three modes of material nature, the creation is furthered. We heard how false ego combined with the mode of goodness and produced the demigods, and combined with the mode of passion and produced the intelligence and the knowledge and working senses, knowledge acquiring working senses. And when false ego combined with the mode of ignorance, the creation proceeded from subtle to gross, beginning with sound vibration, and the gross element that carries that sound, ether, and then the sense, the tongue, the producer of the sound. And therefore, in that way, from subtle to gross, the material elements, the sense objects, and the senses themselves are produced. And again, born from the mode of goodness, and the false ego is the demigods. And the demigods have specific jobs. Or is that the mode of passion? Is it passion or goodness? The demigods are born out of, anyone know? So the demigods they're called Lokapala, the protectors and proprietors of the universe. But also they have a specific job to further the material creation. Without the demigods seeing and taking care of the seeing of the living entity, we cannot see. Without the demigods performing their function in controlling the ears, we cannot hear. So when we talk about the person, us as persons, there is a concept of us as persons that take into account three different elements. One is the adidaivaka person. We've actually covered this in the second canto too. The adidaivaka person is that person, the demigods, who control the over-controllers of the senses. Because when we think of ourselves, we think of us with senses, but we are not independent. So part of us, even though we're not conscious of it, is the demigods, are the demigods. And then another part of us is the mental conception of us, which is called the adhyatmika person. That feeling, that this is who we are. And then finally, there's the Adibhautika person. When you look at me, that the body, more or less, that form of me, that aspect of me that appears in your eyes, that is the Adibhautika person. So all three of these are actually me. It is not just one. When we look at other people, we tend to think that they are just what we see with our eyes, and this is them, but actually they are not that. Sometimes when we look in the mirror and we see ourselves with our eyes, it's such a peculiar experience in one sense, because you're looking at someone and you know, because you've looked at him so many times before, so you know that's me, but it doesn't feel like me when you're looking at him. It's as if we're looking at someone else. Because we, who I am, consist of these three people, not just the Adibhautika person. So in any case, the demigods, who are the Adidaivaka person, they could not combine the rest of the creation. Even though everything was there in one sense, they could not combine it and further the creation, because the purpose of the creation is for the living entities to live within, with their planets, their rulers, their different natures, their different moods, their different abilities, characteristics, names, forms. So this is the purpose of the creation, like the purpose of a prison house doesn't get fulfilled until there are prisoners in it, within it. So similarly, the demigods couldn't push the creation further. And last week we heard the prayers of the demigods, in which they glorified the Lord's lotus feet and ultimately explained that he could not be known, and they explained that they explained the situation to him, that even though we are so powerful, we cannot do anything on our own. You please help us. So that is where the sixth chapter begins, just at the end of the prayers of the demigods. And as Prabhupada called them, they are fascinating prayers. So, in the first verse of the sixth chapter, Maitreya Muni, who is replying to Vidura, said, "The Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva." So for the creation to go further, the different elements of the creation had to combine. That's what they had to do. They had to combine and unify. That's what a creation is. We actually, when there's a creation, when we consider that, oh, I've created this and I've created that, actually we don't create anything. Because what does a creation mean? It takes there's nothing, and then you make something from nothing. Then it's said that you've created it. But when you're taking elements, parts that have already been created by Krishna, the earth has been created by Krishna, the fire is created by Krishna, the atoms have been created by Krishna, the wood, the metal, the nails, the screws, the silicon, the wiring, the cathode rays from the cathode ray tubes, these are all created by Krishna. And what we consider creating, or the artist, all the paint has been created by Krishna, the brush has been created by Krishna, the canvas has been created by Krishna. And then what does the artist, what does he do? He's combining what's already been created. So he's a secondary creator. He creates from what's already been created, like Lord Brahma. So at this point, those elements, despite the presence of the powerful demigods, they could not be combined any further. So that also should give us hints that when we create something, we assemble something only. Because we are actually not the creator, we are only the assembler. Unless we get the blessings of the creator, our part in the creation or the assembling will not go on. It cannot go on. We are not independent. So, the progressive created functions of the universe could not go on any further. And the Lord heard about this from whom? The demigods. Then the Lord, the supremely powerful Lord, then simultaneously entered the 23 elements with the goddess Kali. His external energy, who alone amalgamates means combines, all the different elements. So it is the time factor, which is Krishna's energy and Krishna's personal presence. And we actually saw this in the previous chapter, that at every stage of the creation, Krishna's glance, Maya Dakshena, Maya Adiaksha, under my vision, under my glance, under my, even the word supervision, such an interesting word, supervision, that is Maya Adiakshena. Supervision, above, looking at it. By his glance and supervision implies also control, direction. Without that supervision, it can't go on. So Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Satcharan. So Krishna decides, because this is Krishna's creation, he wants it done. So he does two things. The first thing is he enters as time, the time factor. Because without time, nothing happens. We've often said that time is like a big stick that stirs things into action. Things can be peaceful, then as time moves on, nothing else changes, but time changes. And then things become stirred, and they combine in a completely different way. So Krishna adds the time element, which is a potency of the Paramatma. And he simultaneously himself enters the 23 elements. And then things begin to happen. So it describes actually in this purport, and Prabhupada says in the purport, the Lord enters into the elements and applies his energy called Kali. In all Vedic scriptures, the same principle is accepted. In Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Eko bhyaso rachayitam jagaranda kotim yakchakshya asti jagaranda chayayaranta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govinda mari purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is the original personality of Godhead. By his partial plenary expansion, Mahavishnu, he enters into material nature. So there are three different enterings of the Lord. The first is as Mahavishnu, he enters into the material nature, the Mahatattva. And then into each and every universe, as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he enters into the universe. And then as Chiradakshay Vishnu, into all the elements, including every atom of matter, and also including into everyone's heart. So there's three different entries by Krishna, at three different levels. One, as Mahavishnu, he enters into the material creation with his glance. Then as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he enters into the universe, and as Kiradakshay Vishnu, he enters into every atom and into the heart of every living entity. Similarity is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Ataiva bahunatena kim gyatena tavarjana vishtabhyaham vidam kritsnam ikam senas tito jagat. O Arjun, there is no necessity of you knowing about my innumerable energies which act in various ways. I enter into the material creation by my partial plenary expansion, Paramatma, or the Supersoul, in all the universes and in all the elements thereof, and thus the work of creation goes on. So it is by Krishna's power. In these early cantos of the Bhagavatam, we are getting a glimpse of Krishna's power when Krishna tells Arjuna, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam senas tito jagat. He has just previously been telling Arjuna of how he manifests himself, his power in the material world. I am the strength of the strong, the wisdom amongst the wise, the ability in man. Amongst bodies of water, I am the ocean. of fish, I am the makar, of animals, I am lion. The most powerful and wonderful things, everything that when we look at this material world, we think, wow, that's powerful. That's when people love to just stare at the ocean practically. Why? Because there's a power in there, a vastness and power that attracts our mind. You see a lion in the zoo. Have you seen a lion in the zoo? They just give up off a roar energy. A roar, get it? A roar. Roar energy of power. Yes? It's true. This is Krishna's potency in them. So this is a way we can get a glimpse of Krishna's potency. But then Krishna says, never mind all that. If you want to understand my potency, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam sena sthito jagat. It is me who has entered into every aspect of this material world and I am supporting and maintaining it. Now that's potency for you who can only see matter. It is Krishna that is holding it together. You think it is being held together on its own? No. It is Krishna that is holding it together. If they take atom smasher and atom smasher and smash the atoms and smash the particles that the atoms are made of, they want to be able to find Krishna in that. But he is the one actually holding it together between every atom. Because he is the cause of all causes, the final cause, the ultimate cause. So this is very important that we when we understand who Krishna is, because later on we're going to see him differently. Sakyo vicharu kritapunja punja. We're going to see him playing with his cowherd boyfriends in the forest. And it's important that we understand that his playing with his cowherd boyfriends, his pastimes, his leela, is most wonderful. It is not the same mood that I would be playing, or you. Because that is impelled by a lack in me. But Krishna has everything, but he wants to enjoy pastimes with his devotees in the most wonderful way. So we have to know very, very clearly the potency of Krishna, and then it becomes more wonderful to see him being rubbing, as we see, rubbing his eyes. And while Mother Yasoda is chastising him and he's rubbing the mascara of his two eyes and he's crying. When Kunti Devi was remembering this, thinking, oh, how is this? The Supreme Lord is being controlled by his mother like this. What's actually controlling him? It's his bhakta-vatsalya nature that's placing him under her control. So this understanding of God, the Supreme, is so wonderful, most wonderful. But first, still, we have to understand the potency of Krishna. Otherwise, we don't understand the wonder of Krishna's Dasama Skanda pastimes, his 10th canto pastimes. So here, on the Karanadakshaya Vishnu level, the Lord enters his time and starts moving the creation around, and he enters into the 23 elements. So his entry into the elements is on the Kiridaksha Vishnu level. So here, text 3. When the personality of God had entered into the elements by his energy, all the living entities were enlivened in different activities. Just as one engaged in his work, just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The individual souls in the material world engage in different activities according to their past unfinished desires. After the dissolution of a particular body, the individual soul forgets everything, but the all-merciful Lord who is situated in everyone's heart as the witness, the super soul, awakens him and reminds him of his past deeds, and thus he begins to act accordingly in his next life. This unseen guidance is described as fate, And a sensible man can understand that this continues his material bondage in the three modes of material nature. What a wonderful example of what happens. Because for the creation to go on, time enters, the living entities are already there, and then Krishna enters into the elements, and he enters into each individual soul's heart, and he awakens him, and reminds him of his previous desires based on his karma. Just like in the morning, we waken up, we awaken, and we talk about getting the cobwebs from our mind, and gradually we remember who we are, what we're doing, all the things we have to do today, and then we start moving. So that's actually Krishna from within the heart who reminds us, Matta smittim jnanam aponam cha. Savasya chaham, it is Krishna in everyone's heart. Ridde, sanavisto, and he's giving this remembrance and also forgetfulness, the causing to forget and also the remembrance is Krishna. So after the creation begins, at this level, the living entities are woken up and Krishna from within the heart reminds them of their previous desires, which is carried by the karma of the living entity in the subtle body. Don't you remember you wanted to do this? Don't you remember you're afraid of that? Don't you remember you have this need, you have this want, you have this love, you have this hatred? And then suddenly, as we go about our day, we hate these things and we love those things and we want those things. Can't stand that. But this is all karma vasana. This is all the tendencies from within our karma, but awakened and reminded us by Krishna. So the next thing that happens, this is again the progression of the creation, but we always remember that at every step, at the beginning, in the middle, and the end, there is Krishna and his presence is required. When the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, the gigantic universal form, so there's the Lord, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, who is there, and then when the elements are moving, the gigantic universal form, the Vishwarupa, body of the Lord, came into existence. So Krishna doesn't have a material body. So therefore, in the second canto, this Vishwarupa, the universal form, is described as imaginary. But actually, it's not exactly imaginary, but it's imaginary in the sense that we should not think that Krishna has a material body, because Krishna only has a spiritual body. But it's not imaginary in the sense that it is really there, and because of this universal form, which is like the growing of the body when the soul is placed in it. Unless the soul, and Prabhupada uses this example later on, unless the soul is in the body doesn't grow. But soon as the soul is placed in the body starts to grow. So similarly, when the super soul enters into the material universe, this material body, this subtle material body, which is the Vishwarupa, the universal form, that which the universe is based on, almost like the plan of the universe, it begins to manifest. Because remember, the demigods didn't know what to do. They couldn't create. So this is Krishna's answer. He enters everything, and due to his entering, the universal form manifests. Prabhupada explains in the purport about this Vishwarupa or Viratarupa. The gigantic universal form of the Lord, which is very much appreciated by the impersonalists, is not an eternal form of the Lord. It is not manifested by the supreme will of the Lord after the... It is manifested, by the supreme will of the Lord after the ingredients of material creation. Lord Krishna exhibited this Virat or Vishwarupa to Arjuna just to convince the impersonalist that he is the original personality of Godhead. Krishna exhibited the Virata Rupa. It is not that Krishna was exhibited by the Virata Rupa. The Virata Rupa is not therefore an eternal form of the Lord exhibited in the spiritual sky. In that sense, it's imaginary. It is a material manifestation of the Lord, but the Lord doesn't have a material form, so it's been spoken of in that way. The Archa-Vigraha, or the worshipable deity in the temple, is a similar manifestation of the Lord for the neophytes. But in spite of their material touch, such forms of the Lord as the Virat and Archa are none different, all none different from his eternal form as Lord Krishna. So as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters the universe, and as Chiradakshaya Vishnu enters all the elements and into the heart of every living entity, the universe develops. So Prabhupada explains this in the purport to text 5. As the Lord in his plenary portion entered the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into this gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. So as like the example given is the soul, when it enters the body develops. So similarly, when Krishna enters the universe and the elements, it develops into this Virata Rupa on which everything rests. The gigantic Virata Purush, known as Hiranyamaya, means full of gold, effulgently gold, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the living entities lay with him. So when that Virata Rupa first took its birth, so to speak, it developed. It did not do anything immediately. For 1,000 years, celestial years, it just lied on the waters of the causal of the Gobadak ocean within the universe. The total energy of the Mahatattva in the form of the gigantic Varatarupa, so it's unmanifested at this time. He divided himself, so he's beginning to develop, the Virata Rupa is beginning to develop. He divided himself by himself into the consciousness of the living entity, the life of activities, and self-identification. Which are subdivided into 1, 10, and 3 respectively. So this is the further differentiation of the universal form to facilitate the living entities and the universe developing. So they divide into, it's manifests into 1, 10, and 3 respectively. What are the words here for the it's also the life of activity and self-identification and the consciousness. So the consciousness of the living entity, this is the Mahatattva. And this Virata Rupa carries the totality of all the consciousness of the living entity. And consciousness is given, more or less allotted out to each of the living entities. So he divided himself into that. And also the life of the living entity. And the self-identification of the living entity. So all this is coming from the Virata Rupa. And into 1 and 10 and 3 respectively means that the one consciousness divides into the different living entities. But it's not that if we put all the consciousness back, that we become God or anything like that. But the one consciousness divides into the living entities. And then it is expressed, the living entity's consciousness. Consciousness means desires. The desires of the living entity are expressed through the 10, which means the 10 life heirs, which regulate and give us the power to do whatever we want to do within the material world. And then the three, this is all what Prabhupada explains in the purport, the three that it divides into is this Adiatmik, Adidaivika, and Adibhautik Purusha that we discussed in the beginning. These three, and Prabhupada says, the self-identification. So these three become the self-identification of the person. The demigods who give power to the senses, ourselves who have the feeling of self and the feeling of seeing and the actual senses that we can see when we look in the mirror or look at someone else. So this is the meaning of this. This is, of course, very technical, this creation of the universe and the subject of the universal form. Then the gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord. The gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord is the first incarnation and plenary portion of the Supersoul. He is the self of an unlimited number of living entities, and in him rests the aggregate creation, and thus it flourishes. In other words, the creation starts developing and everything is coming from him, from this Virata Rupa, which is an expansion of the Supersoul, which is an expansion of Krishna ultimately. So again, it goes back to Krishna being the cause of all causes. But the tricky thing is that after the next expansion, from the next expansion, next expansion. So what happens is that people lose track of what the origin of everything is. And that's going to be the point that we get to. There is no way to see the origin, to understand the origin, by looking at the creation. There is no way directly that one can do that. We'll explain that a little bit further later. But this is the main point, that if we want to actually understand the creator of this, we cannot understand the creator of the universe by studying the creation any more than we can understand the grower of the wheat, the farmer, by studying a chapati. We see the chapati there, and it's been cooked, and it's round, and we offer it, and then we eat it. But what can we understand about the farmer who planted the seed, who watched the wheat grow, who harvested it, who separated the wheat from the chaff, and then who ground it? What can we understand about his personality, what he likes, what he doesn't like, from looking at the chapati? What can we understand? Nothing, except that he can do something, maybe. So similarly, by looking at the material world, what conclusions will we come to about Krishna? Practically, we'll end up knowing nothing about him. Thinking, oh yes, I've looked at this chapati, I've cut it apart, I've separated the water out again, taken it apart, looked at the grain, tried to fit together the little pieces that have been crushed and rolled and ground. And we're trying to understand something about the farmer's personal life and what he's thinking. So everything is resting on this universal form, which is resting upon, ultimately upon Krishna. The gigantic universal form is represented by 3, 10, and 1, in the sense that he is the body and the mind and the senses. He is the dynamic force for all movement by 10 kinds of life energy. And he is the one heart where life is, energy is generated. So the energy, because we've spoken about these other ones, the 3 and the 10 already. But the energy within the heart, that is actually coming from the soul. But it is not coming only from the soul. It is coming from the soul in conjunction with the supersoul. So therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport. All these airs are generated from the center of the heart. This is where the soul is situated, within the heart, which is one only. This central energy is superior energy of the Lord, Parashakti, who is seated within the heart with the soul of the body. So Krishna is there, and the soul is there. The soul of the body who acts under the guidance of the Lord. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. Sarvasya chaham ridde sanavisto matyasmitya gyanam apohanam cha vedesh cha savaraham eva vidyo vedantakrit vedavid eva chaham. The complete central force is generated from the heart by the Lord, who is seated there and who helps the conditioned soul in remembering and forgetting. The conditioned state is due to the soul's forgetfulness of his relationship of subordination to the Lord. One who wants to continue to forget the Lord is helped by the Lord to forget him, birth after birth. So when we forget Krishna, it doesn't mean that we are either independent of Krishna or we've forgotten everything. Because by Krishna's grace, when we want to forget Him, when we don't have a strong desire to remember Him, He helps us remember so many other things. Just like, again, when we awaken from sleeping, we remember so many things about who we are, and what our business is, and what we like, and what we don't like, and the problems we have. We remember these gradually or quickly, as soon as we wake up. So Krishna gives those memories to the living entities who want to forget Him. But those who want to remember Him, it's different. He'll give remembrance of Himself. One who wants to continue to forget the Lord is helped by the Lord to forget Him birth after birth. But one who remembers Him by dint of association with a devotee of the Lord is helped to remember Him more and more. Thus the conditioned soul can ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. The process of transcendental help by the Lord is described in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti bhurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. The Buddha Yoga process of self-realization with intelligence transcendental to the mind, devotional service, can alone elevate one from the conditioned state of material entanglement in the cosmic construction. So something has to come from outside, from Krishna, devotional service, something transcendental to our own intelligence and our own mind has to come by Krishna's mercy. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam, given by Krishna. The conditioned state of the living entity is like that of a person within the depths of a huge mechanical arrangement. Now that sentence explains our position very nicely. If we can just imagine a most huge machine, and we are a tiny living entity within the center of that machine, and we are trapped in it and thinking we are running it, and it is running us, and we're thinking we're running it, and trying to pull this lever and wanting that. We're trapped. We have to dodge this thing coming at us. We have to do something to get that bit of food. We're in this huge machine within the depths of a huge mechanical arrangement. Now, how to understand what's actually going on? The mental speculators can reach the point of Buddha Yoga after many, many lifetimes of speculation. But the intelligent person who begins from the platform of intelligence above the mind makes rapid progress in self-realization. Because the Buddha Yoga process entails no fear of deterioration or retrogression at any time. It is the guaranteed path to self-realization as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. So in other words, if we want to get out, and the alternatives are mentioned in the next purport, but here what we should do is mentioned that we have to get this buddhi yoga, this intelligence or spiritual inspiration given by Krishna. That means we have to get spiritual knowledge, devotion from Krishna, which, as Prabhupada explains earlier, is remembrance of him, which comes from association with a devotee of the Lord, by dint of association with a devotee of the Lord. This is devotion. This is where it comes from. Sarusangi, sarusangi, sarva shastra koi lava matra sarusangi, sarva siddhihoi. This is how all perfection comes. So the mental speculators, etc., Prabhupada explains, cannot understand. Or they get caught into thinking that the soul and the super soul are the same. Cannot understand. So the verse again, this was quite a long purport, we read a little bit, was about the universal form, which everything is within the universal form, and then there is the three, the ten, and the one in this universal form. And from this universal form, the living entities are going to be generated, as well as the planets, etc. The Supreme Lord is the Super Soul. Now, how to understand? We are in the depths of this huge mechanical arrangement. Where even the body is a huge mechanical arrangement for the tiny soul. And then the body is in a still huger mechanical arrangement. And we are in the depths of it. So how to be able to understand? We cannot understand by our own speculation, by our own power. That is the point. We need something coming down, as explained, this buddhi yogam. And how does the buddhi yogam come? It comes by tesham satatyuktam bhajatam priti purvakam. By devotional service. Krishna gives it gradually. So the Supreme Lord is the super soul of all the demigods, entrusted with the task of constructing the cosmic manifestation. Being thus prayed to by the demigods, he thought to himself and thus manifested the gigantic form for their understanding. So he manifests this so they can understand how to combine the elements together. It's almost like the documentation for the universe. And if you just follow what is told, if the demigods follow what is told, they'll be able to perform their function in the creation of the universe. But that function is being explained or being illustrated, that is the word, by the universal form. And Prabhupada explains about the speculators, and that, just remember this again, that being the depths in this huge mechanical arrangement, or trying to understand Krishna. Impossible. So far away. So Prabhupada explains in the purport how the speculators can never do it. And then how to actually understand. And he's already said buddhi yoga. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, the mental speculators try to bring the Supreme within the purview of words and minds. But the Lord refuses to be so intelligible. The speculator has no adequate words or mind to gauge the infinity of the Lord, any more than the person in the midst of the machine or the person looking at the chapati. He'll try to describe without any knowledge what the Creator is like. Impossible. He cannot think, he cannot even basically conceive of it, even in the simplest way. The Lord is called Arhokshaja, or the person who is beyond perception by the blunt, limited potency of our senses. One cannot perceive the transcendental name or form of the Lord by mental speculation. The mundane PhDs are completely unable to speculate on the Supreme with their limited senses. Such attempts by the puffed up PhDs are compared to the philosophy of the frog in the well. I find that example of the chapati. It's an interesting one. Can you imagine people sitting around eating a chapati and thinking about how many children the farmer has and what color his hair is and what he was thinking at the time he was planting and what he really likes to eat and who his friends are. And a few of them are sitting around and saying, well, I think it's like this. I think he had black hair. He's 24 years old and he had a big tractor. Another one says, no. You may be right that he had a tractor, but I think he's like this and he must like this. And another one says, no. It's absurd. They can't understand it. But instead of humbly accepting that they can't understand, and then the agnostic comes in and says, no one can say anything about the farmer. But it's not that the farmer, if the farmer comes in and says, well, to tell you the truth, I'm like this, and I'm like this, and I'm like this, and I'm a vegetarian. It's not that no one can say anything about the farmer. The farmer himself can say everything about himself. Why not? So when Krishna gives us knowledge, that knowledge is devotion. It is actually devotion. He puts this, he gives us to the living entity through the devotees. So therefore Prabhupada explains the people, the PhDs, the intelligent people making their attempt compares to them to the philosophy of the frog in the well. A frog in a well was informed of the gigantic Pacific Ocean, and it began to puff himself up in order to understand or measure the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean. Ultimately, the frog burst and died. The title PhD can also be interpreted as plow department, a title meant for the tillers in the paddy field. The attempt of the tillers in the paddy field to understand the cosmic manifestation and the cause behind such wonderful work can be compared to the endeavor of the frog in the well to calculate the measurement of the Pacific Ocean. The Lord can reveal himself only to a person who is submissive and who engages in his transcendental loving service. That will make the Lord inclined. If the person loves Krishna, Krishna becomes inclined to reveal himself and his nature to that person. The demigods, controlling the elements and ingredients of universal affairs, prayed to the Lord for guidance, and thus he manifested his gigantic form as he did at the request of Arjuna. So now a little of the universal form is going to be described. I'll read the verses quickly, and then we'll see how the demigods who are in charge of, these are the Adidaivaka demigods, the ones who are in charge of the senses. They make the senses work. Because we smell, we hear, we see, we taste. But how these work, no one knows. You read the books in the library on the senses, and they just show you pictures and they say what happens. But no one can say why you get the experience of fragrance when you go when you inhale through your nose, you smell something. Why? No one can say why. Why taste works? They'll give you a chart about the tongue, and this part is you get the sweet part taste, and this part you get the bitter taste, and this part you get this astringent taste, and this salty. As if they're telling why it's happening. But no one can say why. They can't even begin to say why the person experiences saltiness or sweetness because something salty is placed on a tongue, this creviced organ that sticks out in a funny way. It's a funny way that everyone keeps it very tightly in their mouth. But how I experience sweetness when I taste, when I eat something with sugary, that's amazing. That's demigod work, and ultimately it's Krishna work. But the demigods couldn't figure it out either. So how to make it happen? Krishna manifests the universal form and says, basically, you do this and your part will be fulfilled. So Maitreya Muni said to Vidura, you may now hear from me how the Supreme Lord separated himself into the diverse forms of the demigods after the manifestation of the gigantic universal form. Agni, or heat. How do we experience heat? How do me, the person, experience it? Separated from his mouth, the universal form had a mouth, and all the directors of material affairs entered into it in their respective positions. By that energy, the living entity expresses himself in words. When the palate of the gigantic form was separately manifested, Varuna, the director of air in the planetary system, Varuna, not air, but water. Who is the director of air? Vayu. Entered therein, and thus the living entity has the facility to taste everything with his tongue. So the universal form is there. The demigod enters in the correct place of the universal form in the proper organ that he has to deal with, and then the living entity experiences that facility. When the Lord's two nostrils separately manifested themselves, that means the universal form, the dual Asuni Kumars entered them in their proper positions, and because of this, the living entity can smell the aromas of everything. This is why. Thereafter, the two eyes of the gigantic form of the Lord were separately manifested. The sun, the director of light, entered them with the partial representation of eyesight, and thus the living entities have the vision of form. When there was a manifestation of skin separated from the gigantic form, Anila, the deity directing the wind, entered with partial touch. So here is wind. Entered with partial touch, and thus the living entities can realize tactile knowledge. Okay, we'll stop here. So remember again that to trace it back, I'm experiencing taste, touch, etc. To trace that back and understand that the ultimate cause of this experience plays a flute and wears a peacock feather on his head, through speculation we cannot understand this. But only through, when Krishna gives knowledge, through Shastra, through the devotees, etc. That's how we understand. When Krishna allows, by his mercy. That is the light in the dark material world. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yep.
You're speaking about Paramatma revealing knowledge and desires to the living entity.
Reminding.
Reminding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When the super soul is like, it knows everything that's happening all the time, the living entity is going through, and this is for all the lives it has, and that knowledge is still there, like of previous lives and things like that.
Certainly.
And when the living entity goes back to Godhead, does this knowledge become revealed? Is there a necessity for it to be revealed?
No. There's a necessity for it to be dissolved. These are called sanskaras. They're impressions within the subtle body. So to go back to Godhead, we cannot take this subtle body with us. It is, Prabhupada explains in one purport, that it is like the undergarments that we wear. And then we have overgarments, coat, chadar, like that. So neither the heavy garments, the gross body, this body, or the subtle body, this isn't us. We have to become completely cleaned of it all. So it is described that the subtle body actually dissolves by the process of bhakti yoga. We cannot take it, nor is it required. It's not just like if the people are sitting around about the chapati. It's to understand the farmer, all the farmer has to do is tell himself, reveal himself. That's all. They don't have to know about how they got to that particular place and what was their fate that bring them there, or even the process of details about the process of how the wheat was combined, even.
So the characteristic of the living entity is one of being a servant of Krishna. When you think of personal characteristics, when we think of ourselves, we think of, I guess, well, either we think of material characteristics and, I guess, impressions of the subtle body. What sort of personal characteristics does the
soul have?
The spiritual person manifests, and because there's just as much variety there.
A full personality.
How does this
revealed? That's advanced stuff when it's revealed, because if we knew that kind of thing now, it wouldn't help us any, because we would just try to act as if we were on that level, but actually we have to take off all this level first before we can act on that level. We have to get rid of that, and then gradually that nature comes out. So therefore there's one verse in the Bhagavatam, yasyasta bhaktiya bhagavata kinchana. It means that all, if one becomes a devotee, that all the good qualities of the demigods become gradually manifest. That means the good qualities of the soul start coming out, and gradually, on a high stage of Krishna consciousness, the actual soul's identity in relationship to Krishna, his eternal identity in relationship to Krishna, is revealed. And that's compared in Chaitanya Charitamrita to the growing of a seed. So the actual fruit of the seed doesn't come till the end. It's not that it's manifest just in the beginning. Yet so much growth has to be done, and the plant has to grow out of the material world for the fruit actually to manifest.
So these characteristics are actually there, but we all have unique spiritual characteristics.
Identity. We have a unique identity. Because we're individuals, we have a personal identity. That's manifested, our love for Krishna is manifested in a perfectly satisfying way for us as individual persons. So inside all the coverings that we consider us at this point, there is actually a person. And we all sort of inherently know that there's someone inside. But we don't who is that person? What does he do? What is he really like? So people are wander around trying to find about that, but they can't find out about that unless that part grows, that servanthood of Krishna part grows, and the material part begins to dissolve and they begin to pay it less attention. But there's a tendency to want to know now. I want to know now who I am, but it's no use. It's detrimental, even.
It's incapable of comprehension. Even if you tell, it won't, because the equipment is not clean enough to receive. So, not that it is useless, but it's just not possible.
But what we would understand, what I mean by useless,
yeah,
is we wouldn't be able to get a proper understanding of what it is, and it would be detrimental. It wouldn't help. because it's like, because we can't actually conceive it of it right now. We can't conceive of what love is of Krishna. We cannot conceive of what service is to Krishna. We cannot conceive of what Krishna looks like. We cannot conceive of what we look like. We can't conceive it because our whole frame of reference is material. But yet we can get little glimpses in, maybe in kirtan or with the deities, with the Bhagavatam, with association of devotees, with the Dham, with the holy names, especially this Panchanga Bhakti, these five potent processes of bhakti. We can get glimpses, and gradually those glimpses turn into panoramic vistas as we advance. Because we want them. If we didn't want them, if we wanted Krishna, he would remind us of Krishna. But because we want that, he reminds us of that. And we say, oh, I want Krishna. And then he says, well, how much? How about if I offer you this? Are you sure you want Krishna? Well, maybe I could take Krishna later and I'll take this now. See you later. That's what happens a lot. Because until we really want Krishna in the sense of want to serve Krishna, we can't have Krishna. So the test seems to be severe. We have to really want that, and we have to want nothing of the material world. So if we ask why we're in the material world, it's really because one has to say that Krishna is reciprocating with our desires, which are basically material. So it was almost as if you were asking, why doesn't he just make it easier? And, you know, I'm saying I want Krishna. Why doesn't he just stop all this material stuff? But we earned it. So we shouldn't blame Krishna for that. We should show, we should see what we really want. And if we want Krishna, we should let those material desires be a impetus to push us to see how fallen and wretched our condition is, that how insincere we are. And let that impel us to call out and chant with some sincerity. But instead of doing that, what we do is, I'm not saying we meaning you, I'm saying we meaning we. What we do is say, anyway, Krishna, I can do something else temporarily. I don't mind. I'll accept something else. Like Prabhupada once said, that we trade Krishna for a pretty face. Meaning that we want Krishna, but if something of Maya comes along, the shadow of Krishna consciousness comes along in a short, in a,